Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 17th of December. Monday at 9 is All Things Political, and we have a lot to talk about. Endorsements from major newspapers in the country for candidates, Republicans and Democrats. And we'll welcome your phone calls as to how this race is shaping up just a couple weeks now before the Iowa caucus. And a reminder to you that we are taking this show to Iowa. January 2nd and 3rd, we'll be broadcasting from Dubuque, Iowa. The Mississippi Mug will be hosting us. And we are inviting you, particularly those of you who will be Iowa caucus goers, to join us in our relatively small, it's not a huge place, but our relatively small area at the Mississippi Mug. So if you're interested either of those days, please give us a call because we'd like to make reservations. We're going to have chocolate cake too. Does that entice you? And welcome you in our audience. If you're interested, it's 414-227-2040. Just say you're interested. Sandy Leuenauer will get back to you and make arrangements as to you know, what time you should be there, when the reception is, all of that. All right, All Things Political, here we go. John Geer is our guest. He is Distinguished Professor of Political Science and Editor of the Journal of Politics. He is at Vanderbilt University. Our on-air number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Professor John Geer, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
One of the blogs this morning said, is John McCain back? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think there's a chance of it, partly because in New Hampshire, where he picked up, for instance, the endorsement this morning of Senator Lieberman, independents can vote. And that gives him a chance to get more support in a state like New Hampshire than he would in a state that doesn't permit independents to participate. He's also probably benefiting from the fact that the field remains even more unclear because of the rise of Mike Huckabee mm-hmm. and the fall of Giuliani and the possible rise, I suppose, of Senator Thompson. And then, of course, there's Mitt Romney, who's been kind of stable in his support but hasn't been able to move up much.
Yeah. What does it mean to have, and we'll talk about the Democrats in a moment, to have newspapers endorse you? I have heard that it's relatively meaningless. Evidently, that's not the case in places like Iowa.
Well, I mean, the actual effect that endorsements have directly on voters isn't particularly great, probably. I mean, in certain contexts, maybe Iowa's unique. But it does provide a chance for a positive news cycle, for some discussion, for that's favorable mm-hmm. towards a candidate. And so it's hard to exactly estimate its effects. But certainly the candidates work very hard for these endorsements. And you can believe that Senator Obama wanted the Des Moines Register's endorsement just as surely Mitt Romney and the other candidates wanted on the Republican side. So even though we aren't able, that is, we as political scientists haven't been able to demonstrate the effects, the fact that candidates think they matter so much suggests there's something to them at least.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting, though, that McCain has barely been mentioned, Professor Geer? He's way down in the polls, and now all of a sudden, is McCain back, is the question of the day.
Yeah. Well, you know, John McCain obviously brings lots of different things to the table, including a war record and somebody who's supposed to be a straight shooter. He also stood by the surge when a lot of people didn't, and it looks like that seems to be having some positive effects. You know, he still has huge problems within the Republican Party, and he also has financial problems. I mean, he may end up taking public funding if he does and were to win the nomination. That would be a huge boom for the Democrats because they could pound away at him for a while. He wouldn't be able to fire much back because he wouldn't have that. He'd be restrained by public funding. So we'll see how it plays out. I mean, the Republican situation is so fluid that I wouldn't want to have to bet a lot of money on any of these candidates.
Right. What about Huckabee? Let's talk about him for a moment. It's just amazing where his poll numbers went in a two-week period of time. Do you think that he is going to win Iowa?
Well, I mean, right now the poll suggests he will. I'm a little dubious of that, partly because he doesn't have a great organization in Iowa, and partly because he's got a balloon of support, and a bubble, if you will, that could be easily burst. And he rose very quickly in the polls. That means that people have a little bit of positive information about him, but they don't know much about him.
Mm-hmm.
And so if some negative information comes out, that could quickly turn. And, you know, this weekend there's been a bit of a dust-up over the over his claims about the bunker mentality of the Bush administration and whether that'll have any staying power among Republican primary voters or caucus goers in Iowa. You don't know, but we've seen these kinds of shifts in support in the primary process because you've got Republicans voting for fellow Republicans. You don't have that anchor partisanship stabilizing preferences, and so things can move around a lot. And we could see Huckabee fall just as quickly as he rose, or maybe he'll continue to rise. But he's got, you know, it's not a sure thing by any standard.
I was reading last week that 45%, which is a huge number, of Republican Iowa caucus goers are considered conservative evangelicals. It seems as though that group is coalescing around Mike Huckabee.
I think that group has coalesced around him to some degree. But at the same time, if they find out other information, such as, you know, not being as supportive of President Bush as some of the other Republicans, that could cause them, you know, to shift away. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, and we also want to know who turns out, and there's also probably 50% of Republican caucus goers who haven't really made up their mind yet either.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could see some changes. The other factor in the race, which I haven't heard anybody talk about, but it's got to play some role, is that Ron Paul not only has a lot of money, but his supporters will turn out.
Oh, yes.
And if they turn out in droves, you know, what proportion of the vote might they get in Iowa, for example, or New Hampshire, probably even more so, because independents can vote and it would be an easier, you know, gig. You don't have to spend 2 hours in a polling place. But, you know, we'll see. There's just it's fascinating. It's a great process for people to watch. I'm
it
sure,
sure
for
is.
Maddening to candidates, it's maddening.
Yeah. So who does Ron Paul hurt if he does pretty well in Iowa?
I don't have a good answer to that because we've never been able to survey with any kind of precision Ron Paul voters who might be their second choice, for example. So in Iowa, if you go to a local caucus and you don't have 15% of the vote, you've got to go to your second choice. So who might second choice supporters of Ron Paul
right.
McCain? I don't really know. Or do they concentrate enough that they end up crossing that 15% threshold in a bunch of states? I think that Ron Paul probably doesn't hurt anybody directly in the sense he brings out people who might not participate for any of these candidates.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, who their second choice is isn't clear to me. In New Hampshire, I think Paul potentially damages McCain because he's likely to eat into some of the independent support that McCain might otherwise get.
Yeah. Now, in Iowa, it's my understanding that let's say you are a Ron Paul supporter and you're caucusing for him, and there really isn't any – he's an anti-war guy. There really isn't any other anti-war candidate.
Right.
So you can remain uncommitted, right?
Yeah, you could do that. And my guess is that would be, the likely scenario. But some of these people who are Paul supporters isn't just anti-war, but they want smaller government.
Right.
And so then do you favor someone like a McCain who wants to control spending, who is, in fact, not as doesn't seem to make social issues as a critical concern of his as, you know, like someone like Mike Huckabee? I don't know. I mean, it's something that we can only guess about. And the difficulty with the polls in general is not only because we don't have good measures of organization, but just trying to figure out who are likely caucus goers isn't an easy and straightforward thing.
Right. And we're getting 7 inches of snow, it seems like, every weekend here in the Midwest, so it might be difficult to get to a caucus.
That could be too, though. I suspect that Iowans will certainly survive that kind of weather. They're used to
I'm
it.
Sure.
They care about this process a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. Let's talk about Romney for a moment before we go to the Democrats. Mm-hmm. Here's a guy who's loaded. He's got all kinds of money. He was the front runner for such a long period of time. He's struggling right now. What's happening?
Well, you know, he's struggling in some ways and not in others. And what I mean by that is that, for example, what's gone unnoticed, in my opinion, is that he's up in the national poll. Since giving that speech, he's moved from, you know, basically 10% to about 15%. Now, that's not a huge shift. Could be sampling error. But I think, you know, he's shown himself to be steady state. I mean, Huckabee has certainly risen at his expense. But he continues to hold a lead in New Hampshire. He gave a performance yesterday on Meet the Press that Tim Russert was giving him a hard time, certainly, about some of his changes on key issues like abortion. But otherwise, I thought he showed himself to be pretty well in command, as well as with his speech. So, you know, this is a marathon, and right now it's a kind of the old tortoise and the hare routine. and is in fact Romney the tortoise and Huckabee the hare. I'm not so sure that Romney isn't continuing to keep himself in pretty good position to do well in this. It's a kind of a compact marathon, if you will, because we have all those primaries on February 5th.
How do you explain, I don't quite understand this, the disparity between the national polls, both on the Republican and the Democratic side, and the polls that we're seeing in Iowa and New Hampshire? They're very different.
Yeah, well, I think it's basically a product of name recognition. That is, that the national polls are reflecting a lot about who you just know off the top of your head. So Giuliani is a known figure nationally, and that's what's being picked up there. Whereas Iowa and New Hampshire have actually had a chance to get to know these candidates, see their advertisements. Some candidates have spent more time there, such as Romney, for example, both in Iowa and New Hampshire, whereas Giuliani now seems to almost pull out of both states. And so you're reflecting the fact there's a very local campaign unfolding in Iowa and New Hampshire, whereas nationally it's just picking up name recognition. So, for example, if Al Gore suddenly announced his candidacy, which he's not going to do, and based on anything that one can reasonably deduce, he would suddenly be pretty high in the national polls.
Mm-hmm.
But that's simply because people know the name of Vice President Gore, and he would, you know, move to second, third, first. Gosh, no, probably not first, but he would certainly be in the top three immediately.
Oh, why doesn't he enter? It would be fun, right? It would be fun, interesting to see.
You know, it'd be fun for us.
But yeah, exactly.
He's decided that he can have influence elsewhere, and certainly given what unfolded at this climate conference this weekend, it suggests that he remains a major player.
He sure does. And what about Giuliani? He's just had a whole string of bad news here. Is he going to be able to get out of the charges that he faces? They are really ethical charges.
Yeah. Mayor Giuliani, has lots of, things going for him in the sense of regards to 9/11 and how he ran New York or whatever. But there are some problems that he faces, and they were inevitably going to come out. And this has caused him, real problems. I mean, he was a classic candidate of somebody who was really well known nationally, or at least had some name recognition, but people didn't know a lot about him. And as they've learned more, questions have arisen. And he also made a calculation, which I suspect he and his staff now regret, to go after the February 5th states and not worry about the early states.
Mm-hmm.
And there were two schools of thought on this. One school of thought was that February 5th was going to run the show, and that's what the Giuliani campaign bought into. The Romney campaign, for example, I think quite smartly, said that February 5th is going to matter. But in point of fact, all those front-loaded primaries on that day in February make Iowa and New Hampshire even more important than in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And so they put their efforts in making sure they did well in those early states. And I think they look like they've made the smart move. And in point of fact, Giuliani made an error.
Let's talk about the Des Moines Register's endorsement of Hillary Clinton. Much has been made by other press saying that the Register really helped John Edwards in his campaign the last go around. What do you think about that? Is this a very important newspaper endorsement?
Well, yeah, I think it's a pretty important newspaper endorsement. I mean, Iowa matters so much. You have a real battle going on between Obama and Clinton, obviously, in Iowa. And there's a question about who's ready to lead. Is in fact Obama capable of doing it? And Des Moines Register makes the decision that they think Hillary Clinton's a better shape to lead the country than Obama, and that says something. But really, it changes the news cycle for a while, and it's some good news for Clinton in the face of what I think was a pretty bad week last week.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really what it just kind of balances things out. And I think what it underscores is that Iowa on that January 3rd, I wouldn't want to have to be putting down a lot of money on who's going to win on the Democratic side.
Right. I keep thinking from, the people we interview who are doing work in Iowa and have been following this race for years now, that people are, and I guess he's on the cover of one of the major news magazines this week, people are underestimating how well organized John Edwards is in Iowa.
Well, I think that's right. And you see, that's one of the things that we don't know. In 2004, everybody talked about how, Dean was doing well, it turns out he had no organization. And he got, really killed in Iowa, and his campaign really floundered. The I Have the Scream speech really didn't drive Dean down. Dean was already in deep trouble when he didn't do well in the Iowa caucuses. Yeah, and no one wants to rule out Edwards. And frankly, Hillary Clinton would much prefer to see Edwards win than Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, if indeed they get into continually a nasty fight and Edwards rises in the polls, Hillary Clinton can live with that because she can fight for another day, and she's then set back the Obama, you know, momentum machine, and she knows she has the resources to compete with Edwards down the road.
We're going to welcome phone calls, and here is our number for you to join All Things Political. Our guest is Professor John Geer, Distinguished Professor of Political Science at Vanderbilt University and editor of the Journal of Politics. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Milwaukee callers, 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. What do you make of the news over the week? Newspaper endorsements, the Boston Globe endorsing John McCain and Barack Obama, the Des Moines Register endorsing Hillary Clinton and John McCain. John McCain's all over the place this weekend. Senator Lieberman giving his support to Senator McCain also over the weekend. So we welcome your phone calls on how all of this is shaping up, whether or not newspapers mean a thing at all, how important Iowa is. And again, an invitation for you to join us in Iowa at the Mississippi Mug Restaurant. We're broadcasting the day of the caucuses, January 3rd, and the day after the caucuses, January 4th, to talk about all the results. It would be something to finally have a show and we'll know the results from Iowa. So if you'd like to join us there, here is the number for you to call. Please make a reservation. The space is limited at the restaurant. So it's 414-227-2040 to make a reservation. 414-227-2040. Two phone calls for Professor Geer in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Join our All Things Political conversation by calling 800-486-8655, or in Milwaukee it is 414-227-2050. We start our calls with Tom from Wausau. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question. My question is do you think the United States is ready for a woman president or an Af-American president at this time?
If you look at polling numbers and you ask people that, a lot of people say they're certainly willing to vote for a woman or an African-American. The number that say they're actually think the country isn't quite prepared, that number goes up. I think that at one level, the country may never, quote, totally be prepared for this kind of change. But the only way to get them ready is to actually have an African-American or a woman in office and realize that in point of fact, there's no difference, that the individuals who are capable can run the country, and that's what really matters. And so to break through these kinds of barriers, we simply need to put qualified people in office, and that'll break it down. And then all of a sudden, you know, the kind of bias that exists out there will dwindle even further.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's interesting, unless it's sort of an unspoken thing and people are wildly different than we think they're going to be when they go into the polling booth. It's really interesting to me how little an issue it seems to be.
There's some data that a colleague of mine at Vanderbilt, Brett Benson, and another colleague at Claremont Graduate University, Jennifer Marola, collected that actually shows there's greater bias against Mormons than there is, in fact, against either
African-Americans
or women,
which
is really quite stunning in lots of different ways. We think of ourselves as a tolerant society, but yet, you know, freedom of religion is one thing that we tout, but there seems to be some caveats to that. It's going to come up. In all likelihood, there will be a woman or African-American or a Mormon, perhaps, you know, maybe two of the three could be, in fact, nominees, and that would break down lots of barriers. And we'll see various kinds of subtle references by the other side, potentially, to concerns. I mean, if Mitt Romney were to run and to get the nomination, the Democrats would raise issues of race against him because of some of the Mormon Church's history.
Yes.
On that front. At the same time, we know that there will be, you know, in some quarters through these independent groups, maybe not so subtle reminders about possible bias against gender and race if either Obama or Hillary Clinton were to win. Or, of course, Bill Richardson, too, shouldn't be left out of this conversation.
It's remarkable in this regard, isn't it? This race is remarkable in this regard.
It really is, and it's 2008 is an exciting race on many fronts. I mean, the first one that's been open on both sides since 1952. It's highly competitive. Either side could not only you can think of nine people probably who have a credible shot at being our next president.
Hmm.
That's really not occurred before, and a number of them, almost half, are going to break barriers potentially,
mm-hmm.
and that makes it even more exciting. One of the things that clearly, based on our past, if you take a look at John Kennedy as an example, when Kennedy won the presidency, the discrimination against Catholics did retreat because all of a sudden they realized here's somebody who's governing, and the kind of old stereotypes that the Pope was going to run the White House was simply not true.
Mm-hmm.
So that a lot of these perceptions can be defeated with just a little bit of information.
And is the problem that we have with Mormonism, I was fascinated by that poll you just cited, is it that we don't understand the religion very well, or do people have, even if they understand it, a negative reaction to Mormonism? What is it?
Well, I mean, our data suggest that basically Mormons aren't very well understood. It's not a known quantity. And if you think, for example, the proportion of this country that's Jewish is approximately 3%. The proportion that's Mormon is a little less than 3%, but roughly the same amount. But take a look at the concentration of the distribution of the population within the U.S. The Jewish community is spread out throughout the country. Maybe there's obviously a lot of Jews in New York City, for example, or the Northeast in general, but it's spread out. In most communities of any size, you're going to have a synagogue. That's not true in the Mormon case. The Mormon population is concentrated in a handful of states, Utah being front and center, but Idaho, Arizona, and other states as well. And so a lot of people, we have data about this, simply don't know any Mormons.
Mm-hmm.
And so that there is this, you're able to create these myths, these stereotypes of Mormons being members of cults, of polygamists, et cetera. That if you can expose people to, in fact, what's really going on, or just give them some real-life examples, such as Mitt Romney, they seem to lessen their bias. And so that I don't think it's ingrained. I think it's just a product of the fact that people don't know much about the religion, and they bought into these kinds of stereotypes that sometimes are on our own TV shows as well.
Thanks very much for your call, Tom. We go next to Corey, and we have lines open if you'd like to join us for all things political, 800-486-8655, 227-2050 in Milwaukee. Corey from Delafield, hi.
Hi. I believe the old media is becoming increasingly irrelevant. The old media typically tells us who's winning and what the polls are, and they're not always right. I think that there's going to be some surprises coming up in New Hampshire and Iowa, and I'd like to point out that this weekend Ron Paul raised over $6.2 million in one day in celebration of the Boston Tea Party, and I believe he beat Hillary Clinton's all-time fundraising record for raising money as a presidential candidate. So that just shows that it's more than just people spamming websites. There's a lot of people angry and concerned about the future, and they're putting their money where their mouth is, and they threw Ron Paul a money bomb. He could surprise us. I'm not saying he'll win, although I am a supporter and I'd like to see him win. I think we should get back to the Constitution. Unfortunately, that means a lot of the current power structures will need to be redone, and that is sometimes a messy process. So I'm in support of a peaceful revolution, and I think free market supporters and people that lean more towards Hillary and some of the Democratic candidates, whatever the result is, it would be nice if we were paying less in taxes and had more free time so we could go out and volunteer with homeless groups and the poor and the needy, because right now we're slaves to the government, and that's all I'd like to say.
All right, and let me ask you, I know you want him to win and think he stands a chance. Do you have a second choice?
On the Republican side, I can't in good conscience lean in that direction because I'm against the war,
uh-huh.
and I'm against, there is a map online, I believe it's called the budget graph, and it visually represents our national, not the debt, but the amount we spend every year, our yearly budget. And the military and the war in Iraq are the largest circles in every single one of the Republican candidates. They talk about cutting things, but they're not cutting the largest circles where we're spending the most amount of money per year, and we're running a deficit, which is increasing our national debt. It's like we can't make ends meet on a yearly basis, so our household continues to mortgage.
All right, so nobody on the Republican side. How about the Democratic side? Do you have a second choice?
I like the idea of socialized medicine, and I was originally leaning for Hillary on the Democrats because I'm open-minded enough to see both Republicans and Democrats as options. However, she's going to continue the big government spending and not address the huge fiscal problems that we're going to be passing on to our children.
All right. Professor Geer.
Well, I mean, Ron Paul's money is amazing. And it's a testimony to, as the caller just indicated, the anger out there.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, the Paul candidacy is the 2008 version of what Howard Dean did in 2003 and 2004. That is, he too tapped into a lot of anger, raised a lot of money. Ron Paul is going to affect the outcomes in a certain way because of he'll have people turn out to vote. He himself is not going to get the Republican nomination. That's not happening. I don't see, you know, even the most optimistic scenario, I don't see how he could possibly win. But he is going to be a player. And the thing that's really fascinating is that if, in fact, you know, he falls out, which I suspect he will, his support doesn't naturally go to the Republican Party. And so that it isn't something that the Republicans are going to be able to capture. Where, you know, let's say that he drops out with all the kind of money that he can raise. I mean, who's going to try to tap into that? And can the Democrats or not? It's not clear to me. In fact, the caller struggled with who on the Democratic side he'd go with because, of course, they may be against the war, but Democrats are going to not want to dismantle a lot of the government spending programs that, in fact, Ron Paul also thinks needs redressing. So he's just a really interesting candidate who's caught fire, and we'll see what kind of effect he has on the process.
But yeah.
It's amazing the amount of money that he's raised.
It is.
He'll outraise all the Republicans this term.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Thanks, Corey, for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655-227-2050 in Milwaukee. It's All Things Political, as it always is, Monday at 9 o'clock. Rob from Brookfield. Hi.
Yeah, I was just wondering what a newspaper endorses a candidate. What's the process they use to determine who they're going to pick? I mean, is it just the editor in chief deciding this is our guy and we're going to endorse him, or is there some type of
in Des Moines? I know there were three editors and they were all female, which was interesting because that's unusual for a newspaper to have all women at the top. And they were lobbied like crazy, weren't they, Professor Geer? Oh, my gosh.
They were lobbied a lot. They, you know, they got to meet all the candidates. They got to talk to all the candidates. They certainly listened to and watched and dissected their speeches and their advertisements. And they made a judgment, I would term an informed judgment, on who they were going to support. I don't think they necessarily went into the process thinking they'd support X, Y, or Z, or maybe they had some, you know, early reads on the particular candidates. But I think they really take these tasks seriously. And every newspaper probably runs it slightly differently. But the Des Moines Register is certainly under a bright light, given its role in the nomination process. So I'm sure they took their task very seriously and weighed all the options. I mean, it certainly, I have to say, seems odd to me that they endorsed McCain, not because McCain isn't a worthy candidate, but, you know, when they had their debate last week, they said there'd been enough discussion of Iraq, they wanted to move to other topics. And that's perfectly fine if that's what they choose to do. But yet, McCain is the Iraq candidate,
mm-hmm.
and they endorsed him, and he's not doing very well in Iowa, which I think must say more about their judgments about the remaining Republican candidates than, in fact, what they think about McCain.
Mm-hmm. I can't remember. I think it was a Times story that talked about how they were being wooed and, you know, to dinners. They met with all the candidates, and former President Bill Clinton has a meeting with them. And then he forgets to say something, so he calls them back.
Yeah, I saw that as well. Yeah, I mean, if former president leaves you a phone message, it's got to be selling on lots of different fronts.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw the article in Today's Times. He's taking a huge role now in her campaign, isn't he? He's a little worried here, and so he's kind of running things in a way.
Well, you know, he he's simply the best political mind of our time. I don't think there's any doubt about that. You know, he has his weaknesses, as people well remember know. But, I mean, it's just a sheer political mind. He is the best person. I mean, somebody will, you know, was saying the other day, oh, well, I'd rather, you know, I'm so pleased and so impressed that Oprah Winfrey's at Obama's side. And my response was, yeah, that is impressive, but I'd rather have Bill Clinton at my side because he's just really that good. Now, there are costs to Hillary Clinton to having him play a big role, and it isn't you know, necessarily always a good thing. But this is somebody who understands politics, and you know, I figure he's probably got some strategy already laid out in his mind for how she not only wins the nomination but wins the presidency. And boy, that's, you know, probably a pretty compelling story. Doesn't mean that she'll do it, but he is formidable on that front.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Rob, for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655. Virginia from Green Bay. Hi.
Good morning. I would like to ask the guest about Howard Wolfson and in Hillary Clinton's campaign, and I wonder if he's taking a little bit more of a backseat role now. And the reason I ask is that he has a very cold and very calculating kind of tone to him. And when Barack Obama first came on the scene, and any time he'd say something like Hillary Clinton voted for the war, Howard Wolfson would get on the air and immediately say, oh, we're so sorry that Obama, you know, abandoned his new politics and the politics of hope. He's attacking. And it occurred to me at the time that that it would be, if he keeps becoming the face of the campaign, it would be very hard to get behind that campaign with a whole heart. And I'm wondering if people have commented about the kind of almost over-organized, over-scripted, calculating campaign. And then if there's time, I'm wondering if the guest knows what kind of role Samantha Power, that expert on genocide, is playing in Barack Obama's campaign. And I'll take my answer off the air, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, I do think that Hillary Clinton has come under, you know, severe criticism for being a scripted candidate, for parsing her words. I mean, there was a debate, what now, 6-8 weeks ago, where, you know, she handled the driver license issue in New York State and Governor Spitzer poorly. And she was trying to have both sides of the, you know, well, have her cake and eat it too, let's put it that way. And I think that's a problem that she faces, and she's a very cautious candidate. There's no doubt about that. There's a recent ad up in Iowa where Hillary Clinton's mother is talking about Hillary Clinton, trying to make her more human, more personable. It's clearly a problem that that Hillary Clinton faces, and it's one that she has to work on, because if she's not able to deal with these kinds of attacks with much success, I guarantee you, and as she knows full well, the Republicans will make these criticisms look like child's play come the fall campaign. And so this is a concern, and I think it's weighing on a lot of voters' minds, too, does she have so many negatives that, in point of fact, she's not a viable general election candidate? I don't think that answer's been put forward yet, but it's a serious question.
Mm-hmm. Where do you think she is now in Iowa? Do you think she's got the momentum here now with the endorsement and with her husband being very active? Or
I think Obama probably still has, quote, the momentum. But, you know, it's so close that, you know, one of the things that, in fact, we talked about earlier was the organization. John Edwards has a lot of organization. You know, it's likely to be a three-way split, and it's likely to be very close. I mean, it's not inconceivable that Hillary Clinton could finish third. It's not inconceivable that Barack Obama could finish third. And so it's just very fluid. And remember, again, the preferences of these voters are very weakly held because you have Democrats competing against Democrats for the support of their fellow Democrats. There's just not a lot that anchors those preferences, so they can change quite rapidly. And we'll see if some new event, some new piece of information comes up, or at the end of the day when over that last weekend people just decide we need change, or we need to have somebody who is going to have the experience that Hillary Clinton has. You just don't know what the public will do. And one of the things that I like about this process, and I know the candidates are spending all their time telling Iowans how wonderful they are, and that's, of course, in their political interest to do so. But I mean, it's not in my political interest. I'm not running for campaign, but it's really true that Iowans take this task very seriously.
And, oh, they do.
And they do a very good
I
job.
Love it.
And so I'm comforted by the fact that if they decide, you know, that, yeah, Obama's not quite ready, or that we really do need change and Obama's the person to do it, you know, I'll be comforted by that because they haven't come to that decision lightly.
Yeah. Let's talk about Obama for a moment. When you were talking about Bill Clinton and the strength of his support and his political mind, I got to tell you, there was something new and quite stirring, though, about not that anybody will vote for him because of her endorsement, but Oprah Winfrey in South Carolina, I that image is going to stay in my mind. Tens of thousands of people, so many people, people of color, people looking at him as a new kind of candidate, even more so than Hillary Clinton, who maybe would have been more of a new candidate if she hadn't been married to a former president.
Right.
There's something about his candidacy that's given people hope. And I wouldn't underestimate that. I just wouldn't.
I'm sorry. I just got...
Your doggy?
I'm sorry. I had a bunch of dogs just plow into my study.
Oh, that's fine. We love dogs.
Yeah, well, so do I. So do I, as evidenced by the fact they just plowed into my study. I have to ask you to ask that again. I apologize totally.
It's okay. I was just struck by the enormity of the event in South Carolina with Oprah Winfrey. That not that anybody's going to vote for him because of that, but it really drew attention to this massive support that he has and this sense that of hope or empowerment or whatever it is that he gives people. There's something there.
Oh, there definitely is something there. And this is what makes him so appealing. I mean, he is... When he gets his rhetorical act together, and he's not always on message, but
right.
When he's on message, he's really a powerful communicator. And I think that really, you know, speaks to what the public is. The public's angry about a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Ron Paul, you know, in fact, I thought that caller might in fact say Ron Paul supporters will go to Obama because he's the one for change. But Obama's not for Ron Paul's kind of change, per se. But
mm-hmm.
nonetheless, he represents that. And, you know, the thing that's interesting to me is how much will the public put faith in experience? You know, I actually, as a political scientist, you look at these kinds of data, and I've actually correlated the amount of experience somebody's had coming into office within their kind of presidential greatness ranking.
Mm-hmm.
No correlation.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's, you know, there's just none at all.
Huh.
Because you think of the great, you know, hugely experienced candidates, Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon,
yeah.
George Bush, number one. You know, President 41, so to speak. You know, mixed presidencies. You know, the inexperienced candidate, John Kennedy, didn't serve long enough, alas, but nonetheless didn't have a huge amount of experience. Abraham Lincoln had very little experience. You know, elected experience in regards to Franklin Roosevelt. He'd served a term and a half as governor. It's just not, you know, it's not a very good predictor. And, in fact, I remember there was an interview David Frost did of John Kennedy when he was in the office, and they asked him what was the thing that best prepared him for the presidency. And his response was really quite telling. He goes, there's nothing that will prepare you for this job. You just simply react to it, and how people will do it is not something you've ever have any preparation for because it is such a daunting task.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think people have to make a judgment. Does Obama have the right kinds of instincts? Does he have the right kind of judgment? Not does he have enough experience, because that doesn't seem to correlate very well, but rather is he able to make those kinds of decisions that people are going to have faith in? And that's, you know, that's what the election's about, and I trust the American public to make a good judgment on that. Maybe Hillary Clinton has exactly what it takes. Maybe, you know, Mitt Romney has what it takes. But it's really hard for us to quantify it, and I don't think just simply years of previous experience in office is a very good guy.
Mm-hmm. More phone calls in a moment. All things political this hour. John Geer, distinguished professor of political science at Vanderbilt University and editor of the Journal of Politics, is our guest. Thank you very much for the call, Virginia. And we have one line open if you'd like to grab it. 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Phone calls welcome for all things political, 800-486-8655, 227-2050 in Milwaukee. A reminder, we'd like to remind you when we do political shows that this show will be broadcasting live from Dubuque, Iowa, the day of the caucus, January 3rd, and the day after the caucus when we know the results. If you're in the area, particularly if you're an Iowa caucus goer, you would be a most welcome member of the audience because we want to talk to you about the process and the process you're going through and deciding. But if you live anywhere, it's fine for you to be there as well. Just a special invite to Iowa people. So you need to register. We're at the Mississippi Mug. It's not a huge place. We wanted the diner kind of chocolate cake coffee atmosphere. So call us and make a reservation, 414-227-2040, 414-227-2040. Kay is next from Green Bay. Hi, Kay.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question for your guest that crosses my mind a lot, but I haven't heard anybody ask it, so I thought I'd give it a go. I think we have two really strong candidates in Clinton and Obama for a lot of various different reasons, you know, that you've already mentioned, experience on Clinton's side, new ideas on Obama's side. And I just wanted to ask, what's the likelihood your guest thinks that we might see a Clinton-Obama ticket? Because that kind of seems like a dream team Democratic ticket to me. And it's so hard to choose between the two of them. I'd love to have them both.
I think the possibilities are far from zero. They're reasonably good if you think of any particular pairwise combination. Of course, Obama would say it should be Obama-Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the chances of Hillary Clinton taking a VP slot are less than Obama. It's hard to know. I mean, sometimes after candidates have tough battles, they tend to go their separate ways and they don't ask each other to be running mates. So they'll obviously Kerry chose Edwards and if you go back, Ronald Reagan chose George Herbert Walker Bush for his VP. It's possible. I suspect that it's not as likely as other scenarios, whether it be someone like an Evan Bayh being a choice. I think Joe Biden, if, for instance, Obama were to be the nominee, I mean, Joe Biden has shown himself to be an amazingly informed, careful thinker in regards to Iraq and would provide kind of experience, if you will, to ease maybe concerns that people might have about Obama. At the end of the day for these candidates, it's really a personal choice. And what I mean by that is that if you take, for example, Clinton's choice of Al Gore to be VP, a lot of people urged him not to choose Gore because he was so similar to Clinton that they needed something different. And the story I've heard, it's from trusted sources, is basically Clinton made the decision that this was the person who would be best to be president if something happened. And I think the same was true for George Bush choosing Dick Cheney. It wasn't because Dick Cheney was bringing a new state into the Republican fold. It was because Bush thought Cheney would be the best president if something happened to them. And when you become a nominee, you suddenly realize that your decisions are going to matter a lot. And I think people are going to make a judgment about who would be the best person. And whether that be Obama or Clinton, depending on who wins and whether they want to go to their rival, I think there's a lot of things that go into these judgments, and they want to be comfortable with that person and also have faith that that person would be a good president if disaster struck them.
Sure. Thank you.
Thanks, Kay. The Chicago Tribune had a poll that came out this weekend, I believe, showing that among Democrats in Illinois, Obama's got a 2-to-1 advantage over Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. Well, I'm not surprised by that.
Really, you're not?
No. I mean, that's home cooking.
Yeah, but it's home cooking to her, too.
Well, yeah, but not nearly as much. I mean, she's senator from New York. She spent a huge amount of time in Arkansas. It's not the same kind of connection.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that, if indeed Hillary Clinton were to win the nomination, she counted Illinois in her column. I mean, Illinois is a strongly blue state, so... I think that's it's going to be discounted by the news media. If the process goes on and Illinois is a key state, it's not going to become a key state because Obama, would have the edge in there. Just like if Hillary Clinton beat Obama in New York, which I assume she would.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's just going to be discounted. It's the states that matter more.
Thanks very much for the call. Let's go next to Matt from Lake Geneva. Hi, Matt.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I'm hoping that maybe 2008 will be the year of the independent candidacies. I'm thinking that maybe there'll be a McCain-Lieberman ticket, and I think maybe Mike Bloomberg might try to get into it. And I think if Ron Paul doesn't get the nomination of the Republican Party, he'll probably, at least I hope he'll run an independent candidacy. And the reason that I'm really looking forward to this is that I have worked with the Libertarian Party before, and I know how hard it is to get ballot access for people who are outside of the Republican-Democratic duopoly with their stranglehold on electoral politics. And I would like to see these high-profile, well-funded, independent candidacies really take a hard run at ballot access to blow that open so that in the future the Republicans and the Democrats do not maintain this stranglehold that they've had on our politics all the time.
Professor Keir.
Well, this is absolutely right. I mean, the Democratic and Republican parties don't agree on a lot of things, but they can agree to create electoral laws that keep third parties out. And certainly ballot access is one problem. But there's a more fundamental problem that faces third parties in this country. They don't get any representation even if they do well. And what I mean by that is that we have a first-past-the-post electoral system where if you win with a plurality of the vote, you can win the whole thing. The Electoral College complicates that a little bit. But, you know, Ross Perot in 1992 got 19% of the vote, no representation. You can win 19% of the vote in a congressional election, and it doesn't matter at all. It may affect who wins, but you're not going to be the person that ends up winning. So there's even a bigger problem facing third parties in our country, and that's basically how our elections are decided, who wins and who loses. Every year there's talk about an independent party, and it's a difficult one because, for example, in 2000, I have to say that Ralph Nader ran as an independent candidate, and for those people who voted for him, they claimed, oh, there was no difference between George Bush and Al Gore. Well, I have to say that those people probably now think that was just a silly idea. Huge differences between the vice president and President Bush. And they're voting for Nader is totally reasonable. It's not the point, but it had real implications. And so lots of talk about it, but third-party candidates have faced hurdles, and they do shift elections in ways that aren't necessarily consistent with the preferences of those who are voting for the third party.
Thanks for the call. Let's go next to Brandon from Sheboygan. Hi, Brandon.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I was wondering, I wanted to ask the professor, now I'm a young voter, and being a young voter, I think having a black candidate and a female candidate is going to definitely bring out a lot of new voters. But I was wondering if there's been any statistical research done as to that amount of people versus the amount of people that are going to just vote against a candidate because of the fact they are female or black, and just your general outlook on that.
Well, that's a good question. We don't have a really good handle on that. The reason is that we can, you know, certain people are going to come to the polls for the first time, young voters and others, because a candidate may spark their interest, Obama being a classic example. We know that there's discrimination, obviously, against African Americans. The extent of it's hard to know because polling data, for example, is usually ill-equipped to get at these questions because you have to ask people, are they bigots? And surprise, surprise, even bigots say, no, I'm not a bigot. So that it becomes tricky to answer. It's also true that sometimes people will use particular events. Let's say that Obama, near the end of the campaign, makes a mistake, like any candidate would. People who are not willing to support blacks may use that as the excuse to vote against someone like Obama, though if Obama had been white, they wouldn't have used that. So it is very difficult to sort out.
The thing is, Obama is white. He's white and black, right?
Well, that is correct. But of course, racial categories aren't, you know, simple and
right,
pristine in any way, right, shape, or form. But, you know, we'll see how it plays out. We do have data, which is frankly depressing, that dark-skinned blacks do fare less well than, mm-hmm, than light-skinned blacks. Mm-hmm. And that's frankly disappointing.
Well, sure it is. Where are the dogs?
Well, the dogs are they're upstairs enjoying treats from what my wife told me. So
they all of a sudden were remarkably quiet.
Yeah, they decide to retreat, but they had a better offer.
Thank you so much for being with us. We'll have you on again. It's a great year for politics, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh, yes. And I get paid to do this. It's
yeah.
Quite a gig.
Yeah, that's good. Thanks, Professor John Geer. Distinguished professor of political science at Vanderbilt University. He is editor of the Journal of Politics, and we thank him so much for being with us. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour and for on-air production as well here in our studios in Milwaukee. And another reminder, we're getting close now to this caucus, so I don't want to say this too often, but we don't say it on other shows. This is All Things Political, so I know that those of you who are listening and are deeply interested in these races, if you'd like to join us in Dubuque, why not? We're going to have cake, coffee, we're going to talk politics. January 3rd, the morning of the caucus, we will be broadcasting from the Mississippi Mug. We'll be going to caucuses that night to get a feel for how it all works. And then we're going to, it's hard to imagine there will be results, but there will be results here in just a couple weeks. And so the morning after, we'll be broadcasting January 4th from the same place. To look at the results of the Iowa caucus. Like to join us? Please call this phone number. Sandy Leuenauer will get back to you. 800, it's not 800. Sorry, it's 414-227-2040. 414-227-2040. And let us know what day you're interested in attending, and we'll sign you up and we'll have a good time. News is coming up from National Public Radio. We'll return with more Monday Conversation. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.